Hello and welcome to National League Town, Mets fandom, Mets history, Mets life, with Long Island's own Greg Prince and Jeff Heisen. Greg is not here this week. It's just me, Jeff. Don't hang up. Don't delete. I know that I'm your second favorite NLT host, but I have a great show planned for you, even without Greg.
Hey, Jeff.
No, Greg, you're not here. Don't tease them.
I'm Greg Prince.
Except you're not here this week. You're on assignment. This week, it's just me. Just Jeff. So how are you doing? How are you coping with this empty part of the schedule? On August 1st, after the trade deadline ended, we knew. And if we knew already, it was confirmed that the chance for the playoffs was over and that we weren't going to even get, to use the Wolpanian era term, meaningful games for the rest of the season, this very disappointing season. You can argue that every season in every sport is disappointing if your team doesn't win the ultimate championship, but this season stands out because of our high expectations. The Mets had two Hall of Famers in the rotation, and a majority of a 101-win team was back, so we expected greatness, not this. Some Mets fans have checked out. I get it. Maybe they'll be back in April, but for now, they've moved on. For me, I can't. There's something in the orange and blue coursing through my veins. As Zach Bryan sings, "Where the hell am I supposed to go?" If the Mets are playing, I'm watching, listening, or at least checking on my phone. One of the ways I cope is that my heart's not as into each game because there is so much less at stake. And as a result, each win and each loss leaves me quicker. And that's not what we want, but it's all we have for the rest of the season. And I cope by looking ahead. I look at the players we are given and try to figure out if they can be part of the 24 Mets. I didn't imagine that in late August I'd be watching games and thinking, boy, DJ Stewart looks like he can be part of the team next year as a lefty DH and backup at first base in the outfield. No, that's not what I thought I'd be thinking about in late August. I wish that the younger players were doing better to give me more confidence for next year. We know that Francisco Alvarez has power, but his inconsistency concerns me. Maybe he's just worn down, and we know that he's very young. By now, we'd hoped that Brett Beatty would have solidified himself as the Mets' third baseman, but that hasn't happened. That doesn't mean it won't happen, but we don't know. Mark Vientos hasn't gotten enough at-bats between Buck's mistreatment of him and his injury for us to know anything. Part of my coping mechanism is to keep a copy of the 24 schedule next to me. Greg loves pocket schedules, and I don't blame him. I remember sending a self-addressed stamped envelope to the ticket office at Shea requesting a pocket schedule. A blank schedule is nothing but possibilities and hope. MLB released the 2024 schedule during the Thursday of the All-Star Week, and that was very early, perhaps earlier than ever, but very smart as there were no games. So let's look ahead together at the schedule. There are two quirks. The Mets will play in three different countries as they will play in the UK and Canada. The Mets will have at least two games that start before noon, one in London as part of the two-game series with the Phillies. Based on precedent, the Sunday game will start at 10 a.m. Eastern time, and the Mets will be in Washington on July 4th, and the Washington home game on the 4th of July always starts at 11 a.m. The Mets open and close the season with Milwaukee. So much for tradition. In fact, the Mets won't play an NL East team at home until May. I remember reading an article in The Athletic which said that teams can request two longer or three shorter West Coast trips. This year, we were happy that the Mets only had two West Coast trips and got them out of the way by the All-Star break, and we thought that having a majority of home games after the All-Star break would be an advantage. Except that having so many road games in the first half might have contributed to their poor record, which helped make these second-half home games irrelevant. In 2024, the Mets will have three shorter West Coast trips, with one in April to an August and look at the August schedule. Are you kidding me? August 1 is an off day and September 1st is a Sunday. So let's go from August 2nd to September 1st, and we see that the Mets will have 27 games with only 9 at home. That's 18 road games, and all will be out of the Eastern time zone, including two West Coast trips. 18 road games, including two West Coast trips in 1 month. That's nuts. It's going to be hard on the players and tough on us as well. I keep a copy of the spring training schedule with me as it brings 2024 1 month closer. But you know what's on the spring training schedule. Miami, St. Louis, Houston, and Washington over and over and over. It's boring, both for the players and for us. I hope that when MLB expands, Rob Manfred tells the easternmost team, be it from Nashville, Raleigh, Charlotte, or Montreal, that it has to hold spring training on the east coast of Florida to give the five existing teams another spring opponent. So that's how I cope. I still watch and cheer, but I'm already looking out the window, waiting for next spring. Moving on, and now my commentary. Rob Manfred has received a 4-year contract extension from the owners to be the commissioner of MLB through January 2029 at a base salary of $17.5 million, with bonuses that bring his salary to $25 million. If you think that the term commissioner means someone who is benevolent to all, who cares not just about the owners, but the players and the fans as well, and is someone who cares about the future of the game, then that description does not apply to Rob Manfred, who is only concerned with the profits of the owners. Any and everything he does is for the owners, not for you, not for me, and not for the good of the game, both now and in the future. Bud Selig changed the role of the job, and Manfred has made it even clearer. He is the COO, the Chief Operating Officer of the MLB Ownership Group only. So keep that in mind whenever he makes a decision or a public declaration. He has improved the game with the pitch clock, but the fact that we like it is incidental, as it has made the game more appealing to TV, increasing the amount that the owners can get in revenue. Besides, if he was really concerned with the pace of the game, he could have eliminated 30 seconds from every half-inning break. But of course, that would have cost his owners revenue. So instead, he created the pitch clock, thereby acting as if what he was doing was best for the game when he was really protecting the bottom line. And what has he done about the ridiculous blackout situation? Nothing. And what has he done about the continued incompetence of the umpires? Nothing. Whenever Manfred's love for the game is questioned, he fights back, of course. But never forget that he referred to the World Series trophy as a scrap of metal, and that he laughed at the start of the press conference when he announced the cancellation of part of the regular season due to the lockout that he instigated. The lockout is in our rearview mirror. But remember that he refused to begin negotiations until the start of spring training rather than in the fall, thereby giving the owners more leverage, even though it hurt the players and the fans. If you went to a wedding and Manfred was sitting at your table, so you would have to make small talk with him, after a half hour, you would ask your partner if you could leave, because I can't stand sitting with that guy for another minute. But that's not a reason why he's a bad commissioner. It's because he operates solely for the benefit of the 30 owners, and in doing so, hurts the long-term interests of the greatest sport ever invented. The thing is, he doesn't care about that. He only cares about his and their financial interests, which is why he was reelected as the Chief Operating Officer of the MLB Ownership Group. I mean, as the commissioner, and why we, as fans, should be unhappy with this news. What do you think? Was I overstating it, Or do you agree that Rob Manfred is a blight on the game? Let us know, nationalleaguetown@gmail.com. Speaking of Rob Manfred, over the All-Star break, he spoke about expansion. We did a whole show on expansion. Manfred said in July that expansion would happen, quote, pretty shortly after the stadium situations in Tampa and Oakland are resolved. We haven't heard anything about Tampa lately, and Oakland is still up in the air. As far as their move to Las Vegas goes, the fans are protesting. Manfred and athletics management don't care. The Athletics just hired a construction manager for the proposed ballpark, which will be put on the strip where the Tropicana Hotel is located. Side note, I'll be staying at the Tropicana this November when the Jets are in town, so I hope that they don't tear it down before then. But again, note that he said pretty shortly. That's an important qualifier, because once expansion is resolved and the new ownership groups for the cities that don't get teams go away, current owners lose their leverage. Right now, owners have leverage because all of the expansion cities are shiny suitors with their wallets open. And we already see this with the Brewers and the White Sox, even though the Brewers' lease won't expire until 2030 and the White Sox for 6 years. Both owners are saying that they want stadium improvements, or maybe they'll be forced to leave. Well, no one's forcing you to leave, but you're demanding that the taxpayers dole out more money for your playground while you're a billionaire, or you'll leave. That's a powerful threat for a politician to hear, and the White Sox and the Brewers owners are taking advantage of this. And you might hear more cities do this, including Baltimore, where Nepo owner John Angelos, who appears to have John Dolan, the Knicks and Rangers owner, as a role model, continues to try to call attention to himself instead of his exciting young team. Angelos hasn't signed a lease with the city of Baltimore yet. It expires at the end of this year, so soon he might threaten to leave. And while the fans should be paying attention to the great team he has and all the exciting young players, he's trying to call attention to himself. And he does have some leverage because of expansion. So watch for other cities to do this as well. That's a side effect of expansion. It's not just adding two teams. The existing teams can use this for their benefit to try to get more money from the taxpayers. And since I have the floor, it's time for another of Jeff's brilliant ideas. This is a simple one. Stop clapping your hands. Of course you can applaud. Of course you can clap your hands. What I'm talking about is the incessant, omnipresent sound of everybody clap your hands. Clap, 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 clap. It's in every venue all over the world. In case you didn't know, it's from a 2000 song by DJ Casper called The Cha-Cha Slide. And if you don't remember The Cha-Cha Slide, think back to weddings and bar mitzvahs that you went to around that time. Every single one had The Cha-Cha Slide. I was pretty good at it, but I don't need to be told when to clap my hands. I can figure it out. It's unoriginal. It's boring, and it's outdated. So to every stadium all over America, all over the world, including Citi Field, stop playing the same clip demanding that everybody clap your hands. And that's another of Jeff's brilliant ideas. And yes, I am aware that Everybody Clap Your Hands is in the latest Adam Sandler movie, but my point still stands. One more thing before I finish. Even though Greg's not here, I want to bring back one of my favorite moments from this season of National League Town. It was during our preseason prediction show, and Greg was offering his opinion, but all of a sudden, he channeled Casey Stengel, and here's how it sounded.
I think that Pete Alonso would have been a favorite of Casey Stengel's, because I can just hear Casey Stengel speaking his native Stengelese, talking about this feller, the polar bear. The polar bears, they don't usually come from the warm climates, but this feller, he's from over there across the bay from where they used to have the field name for me. It was called Huggin' Stengel, and there are nights I wish somebody was Huggin' Stengel, but don't tell my wife, Evna, because she'd be pretty upset. But over there in Tampa, they have that zoo, and you saw what that zoo was in that movie, Goodfellas, and you know that they sometimes feed the people they don't like to the animals, and when you got animals, you got to talk about the squirrel, because the squirrel, he's everywhere. He's trying to get a nut, and he's saving up for winter, and before the end of the year, he's saving up an entire batting crown. And over there at shortstop, you got the fella with the hair who's going to buy him a car. He hasn't bought him a car yet, but you know what that fella we have in the booth says? Home run hitters drive Cadillacs. Well, I don't think Jeff McNeil's got no problem driving whatever it is he wants. So when Lindor buys him that car that he promised him for winning the batting title, he's going to have to get him an even nicer one, maybe even a Rolls Royce. You couldn't make that kind of car money in my day. But today, you can go and you can sign with a nice feller like Mr. Cohn, who will give you a nice big contract like he gave Mr. Lindor. And next, right next to Mr. Lindor is Mr. Escobar. And Mr. Escobar is the pride of his hometown down in Venezuela. And he went and he represented his country during the spring. And we missed him, but we didn't miss him that much because, yeah, you had the fellow with the bat, and the fellow with the bat in his name. And he got people all excited, because we get all excited about the youth of America. But sometimes the youth needs a little more seasoning. I know I can't have too much seasoning when I go out to supper these nights, because I'm getting on in years and most of my friends are dead at the present time. But when you look around the infield, you got to feel good. They've got the experience. They've got the home runs and the batting crowns. And sometimes the gloves are gold. Sometimes it's more like they're platinum and the ball might clank off of them. But you got that fella Guillorme, and he's always catching everything. He catches the bats. He catches the heck that the umpires give him, because they don't know where he's going to be playing. But with these shifts this year and the lack of them, I think Guillorme is going to be playing everywhere by New Year's Day in South America. So I'm feeling pretty good about this infield, Jeff.
I agree with everything that Casey said.
Thank you, Mickey.
Isn't that great? I was totally surprised when he did that. Thank you in absentia, Greg.
I'm Greg Prince.
No, you're still not here, but you'll be back next week when we return with an all-new episode of National League Town. And if you're wondering about the drum fills, those are unusual for the show, but so is having one person host the entire show. And I wanted to break up my voice so you didn't hear me talking continuously for the entirety of the show. I thought of the Keith Olbermann podcast, which is also a solo podcast. So he breaks up the show with organ music from a former ballpark organist. Thank you, Nancy Faust. So I brought in my brother, Lyle, who is the drummer for the Royal Arctic Institute and also for legendary New York rockers Das Damen, who have reunited. They're going out on tour soon. You can find more about them on YouTube. And I asked Lyle to create these drum fills for me, and he did. So thank you, Lyle. And I thank you for joining me. So until next week, for Greg Prince, I'm Jeff Heisen. And as always, let's go Mets! Copyright 2023, music provided by the Royal Arctic Institute. Their latest album, From Coma to Catharsis, is now available on vinyl. For more information and tour dates, check them out on Bandcamp.